translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Uddhava, I say the person is merciful and never injures others. Even if others are aggressive, he is tolerant and forgiving toward all living entities. His strength and meaning in life come from the truth itself. He is free from all envy and jealousy, and his mind is equal in material happiness and distress. Thus he dedicates his time to work for the welfare of all others. His intelligence is never bewildered by material desires, and he has controlled his senses. So that's an interesting point, that the material desires, when the intelligence becomes bewildered by material desires, that's what's bewildering, is trying to figure out how to fulfill our material desires. That causes bewilderment. Continuing, his behavior is always pleasing, never harsh, and always exemplary, and he is free from possessiveness. He never endeavors in ordinary worldly activities, and he strictly controls his eating. Mitapuk. He therefore always remains peaceful and steady. A saintly person is thoughtful and accepts me as his only shelter. Such a person is very cautious in the execution of his duties and is never subject to superficial transformations because he is steady and noble, even in a distressing situation. He has conquered over the six material qualities, namely hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. He is free from all desire for prestige and offers honor to others. He is expert in reviving the Krishna consciousness of others and therefore never cheats anyone. Rather, he is a well-wishing friend to all, being most merciful. Such a saintly person must be considered the most learned of men. He perfectly understands that the ordinary religious duties prescribed by me in various Vedic scriptures possess favorable qualities that purify the performer, and he knows that neglect of such duties constitutes a discrepancy in one's life. Having taken complete shelter at my lotus feet, however, a saintly person ultimately renounces such ordinary religious duties and worships me alone. He is thus considered to be the best among all living entities. We left off, the last one was Shanta. So today is number 16, Stira. Remembering that Lord Krishna is the basis of everything, a devotee does not become fearful or impatient. Austera also means steady, or one who's fixed in his prescribed duty. It's like the name Yudhishthira, means one who's steady in battle. So whatever one's duty is, he should be steady. Prabhupada used the term fixed up for devotees who could be depended upon to perform their services. That's a very good quality for making spiritual advancement. Not that one is whimsical and going here and there, or running after the mind, trying to find some superficial or external situation that's pleasing. Not recommended, because we can't find the perfect situation for gratifying the senses. Even if you go to Hawaii, I have experience.
Even Hawaii?
Yeah, I went to Hawaii thinking it was going to be paradise, but it turned out it wasn't paradise. Because when you go and you expect, you have high expectations for paradise. If you think you're going to paradise, you're thinking this is going to be really good. Whereas if you're just staying in a regular place, then maybe your hopes are not so high. So the hopes were very high, but they weren't fulfilled. So therefore I was even more unhappy. I thought, here I am in Hawaii. I spent all this money to come here. And I'm supposed to be really enjoying on a high level, and it's not happening. So then you become more depressed. We can't make a perfect arrangement for enjoying in this material world. Even Indra's got practically the closest thing you could imagine. It's kind of like almost a facsimile of the spiritual world, Indra's level of enjoyment, his opulence, the types of things that he has access to. It's not even considered sinful to enjoy sense gratification in the heavenly planets. And they don't grow old like we grow old and look, you know, our appearance changes, but they don't get old. That's why the Urvashi, Indra's, or I could say one of the chief society women, it was even decided that she should propose a relationship with Indra's son, Arjuna, when he came to the heavenly planets. I mean, that's another story, we won't go into that, but the idea I was trying to make is that she didn't look any older. She looked very young and attractive, even though she had been the consort of, you know, for generations. But even Indra, although he's got such incredible opportunities for sense enjoyment, he's always in anxiety. Because he's always worried that someone's going to take over his position, and then he won't have the position anymore. Therefore, he's always looking out to see if there's anyone practicing meditation. If anyone's doing any austerities or yoga, he gets very alarmed, because he's thinking that if they practice this Ashtanga yoga, and they get mystic powers, and they'll be able to take over my position. So what does he do? He sends the society, the apsaras, down to wherever the persons are practicing meditation, and the apsaras are meant to distract the minds of the yogis. Indra has to do that. Imagine how much, that's not a very pleasing thing to do. You know someone's, you know, trying to practice this austerity, and instead of letting him be elevated or wishing him well, you're sending someone there to confound his practice. That's not a very nice thing to do. So that it's very disturbing that Indra has to do that. It's embarrassing. I'm so afraid of my position that I have to send someone down there. Like, you know, if you're competing with some other temple in book distribution, so you're afraid that they're going to get ahead, so you cut their tires. Oh, that's terrible, isn't it? If you can't, you should be able to compete with them in a fair way. You don't have to cut their tires. So that you can, it's embarrassing. So Indra has to do these things, and he's afraid. Not only of the yogis, but he's afraid of the daityas also. Just like Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj defeated him. And then he lost everything. Indra had to go away, very tail between the legs, and hide away. He lost his own palace, lost everything. And then Indra's also afraid if he makes any offenses. One has to be afraid of that too. And in his position, there's a tendency to commit offenses. Once he was sitting on his assembly house and he was enjoying the praise of many poets and praisers and dancers and so many things, and his guru came in the assembly, but he didn't really want to interrupt. He was kind of enjoying the rasa of being praised and being recognized and being the enjoyer, so he preferred not to see his guru. He acted like he didn't see him, so he wouldn't have to bow down and pay his obeisances. But because of that mistake, he fell down and got himself into trouble. Sometimes Indra gets too carried away with the opportunities for sense gratification, and then he gets cursed. That's another fear that he has. If he gets too much involved in sense gratification, then a sage may curse him. That happened to him. That's how he got 1,000 eyes. That's another story. Because of his too much lusty desires. Our point is that we can't enjoy this material world, even if we go up to the position of Brahma, or even in the position of Indra. And therefore, trying to go somewhere else to make ourselves satisfied doesn't work. Better to remain steady in whatever situation one is in, be satisfied. And Krishna has put me here. Krishna has given me this position. He's given me this service. Let me be satisfied. Let me do the best I can. Because wherever we go, our mind will come with us. And it's the mind that's the problem. It's not the particular situation. Those who are in the warm climates, they think, if I could just go to a cooler climate. And those in the cool climate think, if I could just be in a warmer climate. Next quality, these are the qualities of the devotees, saintly person. 17, much sharana. A devotee does not take pleasure in anything except serving Lord Krishna and is constantly attentive in the execution of his duties. A devotee knows that only Lord Krishna can protect him and engage him in useful work. So, sharana means shelter. Matsharana, they have taken shelter of me. They don't even worship demigods. This is a principle of matsharana. Because if one's worshiping demigods, then it means he's still got some hope other than Krishna, that I need some protection, I need some shelter. But Krishna doesn't appreciate this. One time, Arjuna had made a vow that he would give protection to this particular Brahmin in Dvarka, because the Brahmin's sons, children, all kept disappearing right after they were born. And it was getting to be something, you know, unbelievable, because normally that didn't happen at all in Dwarka. Dwarka, the place of Lord Krishna, the city of Lord Krishna, that a child would, first of all, a child of a Brahmin would die, and second of all, he would die before his parents. That was considered to be the deficiency of the government. If a child died before his parents. And in this case, the Brahmin's son died again and again. It happened several times. And he was so upset, he was condemning the Kshatriyas of Dwarka. He said, what is the use of these type of Kshatriyas? So Arjuna said, he couldn't tolerate this. He said, look, don't you worry. I'll protect your next child. I'm Arjuna. You must have heard my name. I have my Gandiva bow. And if I don't protect your child, then I will enter the fire and give up my life because I've become so sinful. So the Brahmin was somehow or other convinced, and he had another child. And as soon as the child was born, then Arjuna was praying to Lord Shiva to protect his Gandiva bow. But Krishna didn't appreciate that. So the Gandiva bow disappeared and the baby also disappeared. And there was Arjuna. No Gandiva bow, no baby. And he took this vow that he was going to enter fire. So that's one thing about Arjuna. When he made a vow, he took it seriously. So he was preparing himself to enter the fire. And Krishna said, no, no, wait, come with me. And he took him. So ultimately, what happened was, the only person that could interfere with his prayer to Lord Shiva would have been Krishna, because the only person above Shiva is Krishna. But Krishna doesn't even like us to worship Lord Shiva for protection or for shelter or for anything, for material things. We're not even supposed to worship Durga or the wife of Lord Shiva, even though she's in charge of this material energy. We're supposed to be completely dependent upon Krishna. Mat Sharana. Whatever Krishna gives, a devotee doesn't go to flatter others. He depends. If Krishna wants, he can give me. If he wants to give me something, he can give. And if he wants to take it away, he can take it away. If he wants to protect me, Mara Krishna Rake Ke, Rake Krishna Mara Ke. Krishna wants to kill someone, no one can protect him. If Krishna wants to protect someone, no one can harm him. And Krishna owns everything, and the demigods are all working under his direction. So why should I need to worship anyone else? Or praise anyone else? If you put water on the root of the tree, you don't need to put water on each branch. Isn't it? You don't need to put water on each leaf. If someone's putting water on each leaf and you go and say, what are you doing? I'm putting water on each leaf. You say, well, that's foolish. All you need to do is put water on the root and each leaf automatically gets watered. So in the same way, if one takes shelter of Krishna, he doesn't have to worry about anything. Krishna will take care of everything. So does that mean that he's disrespectful to the demigods or to people in general? No, he's respectful according to proper etiquette, but still he understands that they're not actually my shelter. They can't actually give me anything. It's all up to Krishna. In this way he remains completely peaceful because he knows that Krishna will take care of all of his necessities. Next quality is Muni. A devotee is thoughtful and through intelligent contemplation avoids becoming distracted from his spiritual advancement. And Srila Prabhupada used to say, don't be dull-headed. We should be thoughtful. We should think about things. We shouldn't be afraid to think or to use our intelligence to try to figure something out. Trying to understand the scripture, that's a good use of intelligence. Not trying to speculate, come up with a different conclusion, or some in between the lines, but trying to understand what's actually written there in the scriptures, that's good. That's a good use of the intelligence. Or how to perform my service better. That's a good use of intelligence. If I have some service, and I should try to improve it. If I'm distributing books, and I'm distributing a certain number of books, I should think, well, let me try to improve. Let me see if I can figure out how to distribute more books. That's intelligence. And that's good use of intelligence. Or trying to understand philosophy, understand Krishna's words, or the spiritual master's instructions. Continuing here in this quality, by intelligence he is freed from doubts about Lord Krishna and confronts all problems in life with steady Krishna consciousness. What happens if there is something that one doesn't understand in the scriptures? He doesn't have doubts. He tries to understand to his best ability, and he asks senior devotees to kindly clarify. But even if something is still beyond his ability to understand, then he puts it aside for the time being, and he'll revisit it later. Krishna will solve that dilemma later on. He doesn't think there's something wrong with the scriptures, or he doesn't doubt Krishna, but he thinks, well, I'm deficient. My intelligence is not sharp enough to understand that right now. But if I go on serving, and if I please Krishna and Guru, then at some point I'll be able to understand. Krishna will reveal it to me. Next one, number 19, apramata. Who knows what pramata means?
Mad.
Yeah, madness. Apramata means one who forgets the Supreme Lord is more or less crazy, but a devotee remains sane by offering his activities to Lord Krishna. That was always a little humorous. Prabhupada said one of the qualities of a devotee is to be sane. It's not a joke. If someone's insane, it's not possible to be a devotee. Because it requires that one has to be able to control his mind. If he can't control his mind, how can he be a devotee? So living in the temple, for example, there's a qualification. One has to be sane. Now, if someone's not sane, that doesn't mean that they can't make some progress. They can make some progress by chanting and by taking prasadam and hearing and engaging in devotional service. But to be initiated devotee, that's, one has to be sane. Otherwise, how will he be able to, if an insane person makes a vow, how will he be able to keep it? His mind is not under his control. He's out of control. Therefore, there is some, just like being a human is one of the qualifications for taking initiation. And being a human that's sane is required. Animals can't take initiation. We don't give initiation to animals. Next, 20. Gabhiratma. Yeah. As a devotee merges into the ocean of Krishna consciousness, his own consciousness becomes deeper and deeper. Ordinary superficial persons hovering on the material platform cannot fathom the extent of a devotee's awareness. So Gabhira that means grave, very deep. He doesn't speak
like deep craving, also somewhat concealed, or
he doesn't reveal his mind. He doesn't speak what's on his mind so easily. To understand his mind, it is said, Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra Vigyan Bhujaya. It's very difficult to understand the mind of a pure devotee. So any questions about any of these points?
Can I ask something that's not related, if there's no other questions?
Yes.
It is stated that the process of bhakti destroys two kinds of karma, kuta and bija. Now, I was wondering, at what point of one's Krishna conscious development does that take place?
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadharman Parichajam, Mamekam Sharanam Vrajam, Aham Tvam Sarvapapebhyo, Mokshay Shami Mashucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and surrender them to me. So that's the point. When one gives up everything else and surrenders to Krishna. This religion that Krishna is referring to, it doesn't mean bona fide religion, it means pseudo-religion. Because bona fide religion is dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, it comes from Krishna. So Krishna wouldn't say give up real religion. He doesn't mean give up all varieties of real religion. He means give up all varieties of pseudo or something that's not really religion. The real religion is Sanatana Dharma. So if one has varieties of activities in Sanatana Dharma, then that's what Krishna wants. That's recommended. But anything else, like worshipping demigods, that's not part of Sanatana Dharma. That's for material maintenance, or one has some desires to be fulfilled in the material world. But none of those things are necessary. So therefore Krishna wants us to give that up. Or other duties, for example, Yudhisthira was famous that he never told a lie. So that's dharma on one level, satya dharma. But Krishna wanted him to tell a lie. Krishna said, Yudhisthira, you call out that Ashwatthama has been slain. Just you call out loud enough so that Dronacharya will hear. And when Dronacharya hears that the great Yudhisthira, who never told a lie, said that, called out that Ashwatthama, his son, has been slain, then he'll be overwhelmed, at least momentarily, for a moment or two or longer, he will be overwhelmed with some kind of, you can just imagine, Dronacharya's fighting away, devastating the other side, and then if he hears that his beloved son has died from the mouth of Yudhisthira, at least temporarily he'd be shocked and stunned, and that would be enough time for Drishtadyumna to do what he had to do, to be able to kill Drona. So, but Yudhisthira didn't want to do that. I never told a lie, he didn't want to say. He didn't want to give up that dharma, but actually that would have been a higher principle to give up that dharma. He should have immediately. And same thing with Bhishma. A higher dharma, a higher principle would have been, what do I care for? Duryodhana, okay, yes, according to ordinary dharma, I'm a kshatriya working under his direction, and this, I made a vow, this and that. that nothing's higher than surrendering to Krishna. So, if you're looking for a more technical answer, then at least that's how I could answer that in terms of Krishna said, you've given up all varieties of religion and surrendered to me, then now I will protect you from all sinful reactions.
What I had in mind, Maharaj, was we see certain devotees certainly very seriously take up Krishna consciousness and seriously surrendering to Krishna, but kuta, that inclination to do a particular kind of undesirable activity in some form or other remains, and then later on when they're exposed to peculiar situation, they act on it. And sometimes even after spending significant amount of time in Krishna consciousness and obviously making certain spiritual advancements. So that's why I was wondering, at what time does this kuta and bija get destroyed?
Yeah. Well, it can be destroyed in a moment, or it can take many thousands of lifetimes. Yes. It's a question of he's put aside everything. Now he's taken shelter of Krishna. He doesn't have any other akinshin. We were talking about akinshin. He's given up all of his other considerations. He doesn't care for anyone else or anything else. He's desireless in a sense. He doesn't care for, because if he wants to go to the heavenly planets, or if he wants to enjoy this world, or he wants to be famous. Imagine if you want to be famous and you're asked to do something. I remember there was one devotee. And he had a particular service that was a very difficult service. And he was embarrassed by the service, because people were criticizing. Or criticizing the movement that he was involved with. So therefore, because of that embarrassment, he wasn't able to perform his, it interfered with his service. So, in other words, we may be involved in a movement that causes us to be criticized. We get criticized for, we used to get criticized more for having bald heads. Now we're criticized less than we used to be, because so many others have taken up the fashion. Or our dress. Sometimes people criticize us, like, why are you dressed like that? It looks, they don't like it.
What's that on your forehead?
So different things. Or we may be criticized for being part of the movement where some people who were affiliated with the movement misbehaved. So, if we think, well, now let me, I don't know if I can identify myself with this movement any longer. Well, that's, you see, that's still another attachment. We have to be willing to take whatever comes through our service without desiring anything, without expecting any results of fame or fortune or good health. What if I surrender to Krishna and my health is not good, so I should give up Krishna and go to someone else, find some other, instead of taking prasad, I'll eat something other than prasad. No, you have to have faith that Krishna is going to take care of me. Okay, last question.
So this whole point on surrendering, does it come like when we, I know that like the last stage of the subtle body is like conquering the false ego. So it's when we come to terms with, our shortcomings and try to improve upon them, or seeing them for what they are and trying to get over them.
Those are all part of surrendering. Surrendering in and of itself is to accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the most lovable object. He's the Lord, and I'm His eternal servant, and my position is in that way. So that in itself includes all the other good things that one could possibly imagine to include. It includes being a good member of the environment. It includes not being a polluter. It includes not being a liar. It includes being nice to all living entities. Everything's included in that. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.